CJAM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, Jenny Noble will be telling us about Cure Mucolipidosis. So, can you tell me a little bit about your work with Cure?
With Cure Mucolipidosis?
Yes.
It's a not-for-profit based in the United States. It has a global board of directors, so we are all around the world. We were formed 3 years ago, and our primary role is to push for research or push for therapies for mucolipidosis. We also support the work of the Mucolipidosis Collaborative Research Network, which is a group of scientists that we put together in 2019. And their work, their roles, or the work that they do is all around finding different therapies, different drugs that might benefit mucolipidosis.
So, for those who might not be as familiar, how does mucolipidosis typically affect a person?
It's a very, very rare lysosomal storage disease. So children with ML have enzymes that don't work properly, so they're unable to recycle or get rid of waste products. So in our bodies, we have the lysosome does a constant recycling of proteins and minerals that we either reuse in our bodies or get rid of. And children with ML can't do that. And so this garbage stores in their cells. I guess you could, in simple forms, if you could imagine a brand new kitchen that's clean and everything's working really, really well. And then over time you get a bit lazy about taking out the garbage. And you can imagine that if you didn't do that, then the kitchen wouldn't function. And that's kind of what happens in the cells of children with ML.
So, when you say it's rare, do you know offhand about how many cases there are?
We don't, but scientists estimate that there would be around 2,000 to 3,000 alive patients in the world. So we're talking ultra rare.
So, in that sense, are there any effective treatments to date?
No, currently there isn't. However, Cure ML is pursuing gene therapy, and we are about ready to make the drug so that we can test it in animals that are affected by mucolipidosis.
So, in your time with Cure Mucolipidosis, has there been any success moment or story that stands out for you?
I guess being 3 years old is not a lot has happened, although we have sponsored a lot of research. So we are currently sponsoring a naturally occurring cat model. And so the cats have had all their mutations identified, and we're doing the natural history study on the colony. That's never been done before. So I guess we're really excited to be able to support that project. I guess the other really major one relates really closely to my children, in that there's never been a really good understanding of why these kids don't use and uptake drugs the way that they should. And my son passed away a couple of years ago, and I was seeing his drug use for end of life increasing tenfold with little effect. And so we've just sponsored a major project to understand what's going on there. And I guess that one we're really proud of, because that will help all of the ML children.
So, if you could send any message to the community about the need to keep pushing forward and advocate for patients, what would you say?
I would say to all of the ML families, join the cause, join the battle, because as an organisation we can't do it by ourselves. We need every family who has a child affected by ML to join the cause and join the battle.
So, you know, that being said, how do you reach out to the patient community?
We have a pretty good database. We're starting to see families in Europe uniting, because if we can achieve that all around the world, then we have a united voice, and we're not singular. We're not a tiny band of parents fighting for our children. We're a large community doing that, and we're already starting to see Europe come together. New Zealand and Australia are doing the same thing. America's a little bit slow off the mark, but I'm hoping that over time we'll start to see more and more of the ML community come together. It's really important. It really is. We've got to stop these children from dying.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
In this segment of our show, Erica Klauber will be telling us about CCA Kids. So what can you tell me about CCA Kids?
So I'm excited to say that CCA Kids will be turning 35 years old this year, and we are a patient support organization. So we help families and children, including siblings and grandparents, across the country and some internationally, who struggle with living with a facial difference, and we want to take that struggle to a thriving situation. So a facial difference is any what people used to call disfigurement, but now we use the word difference, of the head or neck. And it could be something like cleft lip and palate, which is one of the most common birth differences, or it could be something that's pretty rare, like Treacher-Collins syndrome or Apert syndrome, or it can be acquired through injury or, you know, traumatic recovery from something like cancer. So facial differences are a really wide net. At CCA, we focus mostly on craniofacial syndromes, but we definitely welcome everyone who has a facial difference of any kind to come to us for support, networking, and really, like I said, to just go from struggling with acceptance to joyfully thriving and celebrating who you are.
So, in that sense, do you ever speak to any myths or misperceptions regarding facial differences?
Absolutely. There are many out there. One of the most pervasive is that people with facial differences are also often cast as villains, or they're somehow evil or scary, and that is one that we are working really hard to dispel, because people with facial differences are definitely not inherently evil. They are no more villainous than anyone else. They're just human beings. They can be wonderful people. They can be equally terrible people. But by and large, just having a facial difference doesn't make you scary or a monster. And another one is just that they can't do things that other people can do. You know, craniofacial conditions often come with a wide variety of other medical complications, but it is not one size fit all. It doesn't mean that you can't be an athlete, because we have so many athletes in our community. We have so many scholars and brilliant people. And a lot of people assume that you have low intelligence or that you're incapable of speaking for yourself. None of those are true. Our members have wonderful qualities and are able to do pretty much anything they want to do, as long as they don't have something else preventing them. Their facial difference does not prevent them. They may need additional therapies. They may need assistive and adaptive devices if they have speech difficulties or hearing differences, but it's not the facial difference that stands in their way. It's really the perceptions that other people believe about them, and we have to work hard to overcome those stigmas and those myths.
So, how do you go about reaching out to the affected community to let them know that they do have an advocate and an ally?
We have a large presence online, so we're continually trying to increase that. Right now, we're on Facebook and Instagram. We have a presence on Twitter, but we're not super active there. And we have a website and a YouTube page. I think the most notable in the last few years is our YouTube video series. And we have a wonderful, amazing intern, Aaliyah Booker. And she's been doing interviews with all sorts of different kinds of people who represent all different types of walks of life. And that way, our kids can see many different representations of what they can do and what they can be and who they can look up to in their lives. So I think our biggest outreach is to our community is through the internet and social media, and especially YouTube right now. But we also work very hard to meet with our craniofacial centers and hospitals across the country. That's a big effort of ours. We push all year long to get meetings with those doctors and medical professionals, because they see our kids for care. And if they see a child is struggling or has a need or honestly has something to give back, if they're really doing great and could inspire other people, we want them to reach out and connect them to us, or at least suggest to those patients, hey, did you know about this organization? Because that's really the people that our families trust, their doctors, and they see them on a regular, organized basis. So that's kind of our main outreach. But we also reach out into schools to prevent bullying and increase acceptance. And that work has really shown us more than anything that everybody struggles with these same feelings over their lifespan. And we can be incredible advocates to help people help themselves. So that's another way that we go into schools and share our stories. We connect them to literature and books and curriculum, most notably the book Wonder and for middle schoolers. And that's a big part of our outreach as well.
So in your time with CCA Kids, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
Definitely. I have maybe a personal one, and then I'll share kind of a broader one. But I remember the moment that it clicked for me, because I found CCA as a patient, and I had been struggling my whole life to find a doctor who knew how to treat my condition, because it's not a specific syndrome. And I remember meeting CCA. They kind of directed me to a doctor that maybe I hadn't heard of before, or I definitely hadn't heard of before, and I was able to select him and get care. And a few years later, I decided, or I had been volunteering with them. They were so warm. They were so loving. And so a few years later, as this volunteer for CCA, I remember someone came up to me at a party, and it's that telltale, you know it's coming. They look at you, and they're like, what's wrong with your face? And in that moment, there was no fear. There was no shame. I just proudly said, oh, I have a craniofacial condition, and I work with this organization, and I had that platform to just start a conversation and turn that person on their heels. So I want to give that moment of confidence, that platform to stand on, to every other kid out there That to me is like the defining success moment. I knew when I was in that very emotionally charged situation and I had an answer and a response, I was like, this is why we do what we do. But beyond that, I think, you know, we've been through a lot. The Wonder Years, when the movie came out and we were thrust into the national conversation, that was definitely a high watermark for us. We got to experience the ability to really change people's minds, and that has continued to some degree. But a recent success over the past year, I would just have to say, is having our intern, Aaliyah, seeing how she has just totally reached out to teenagers and young adults and seeing their advocacy in action. I am so amazed. We did an award this year called the David Roche Award. It's the second year running. And we took nominations from the community. And we had over 70 nominations submitted of advocates in the field. And reading those and seeing what people are doing, whether it's a parent who is leading a support group, whether it's a person on TikTok telling their story, whether it is someone establishing a nonprofit support group for ultra super rare conditions, I was just blown away by the amount of work that our community does, and that really struck me as a success. We saw those stories, we put them on a national stage, we highlighted some of them, and we plan to do that every year to just bring to light the work being done, not just by CCA, but by the individuals who make up our organization.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay, yeah, absolutely.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
UWindsor Campus Police reminds you to always be aware of building safety and security to help prevent theft and break-ins.
Always keep track of your belongings and never leave them unattended, even for a minute.
If you see a stranger going from office to office,
a person loitering for a long period of time,
or somebody waiting outside of offices near closing time,
you can report suspicious behavior immediately to Campus Police at 519-253-3000, extension 1234.
Always stay aware of building safety and security on campus.
UWindsor Campus Police is here to help you.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Miles. Earlier in our show, Jenny Noble told us a little bit about cure-mucolipidosis, and Erica Klauber told us a little bit about CCA Kids. In this segment of our show, Susanna Eucheidias will be sharing her reflections on working for Theater Terrific. So as you look back on your time with Theater Terrific, what were some of the highlights for you as artistic director?
There were many highlights. A very profound and deeply felt highlight was that I found myself being a student, and what I learned from the many artists that shared was the richness of so many lived perspectives. You know, I always say there were books in their library that had never been read or seen or witnessed, and they shared their stories and their lived perspective, and it shone light in places that I don't think light had been shone before, especially in the sense of creating a theater work.
So
I was always actually in awe of that perspective, and just learned things that I don't think I could have ever witnessed or experienced or heard anywhere else.
So the last time we spoke, you mentioned some of the contributions by artists with disabilities. Did working alongside them change how you looked at the disability community in any way?
Oh, well, yes, of course it. You know, again, and I always use the word respect, because to take the time to be still and actually to be quiet and to learn to listen the different forms of expression that the disability community has. For those, for example, who speak through a talking board, for those who express while in a wheelchair, for those who may have cognitive differences, language differences, you know, it actually opened avenues of creative expression that are brand new. It was really a journey of discovery, endless discovery.
So, in that sense, do you find that doing it through theater in a cool, relatable way, something that the public was generally responsive to?
I think deeply responsive to. I always remember, for example, we were one of the companies to first do a theater production out in the open, in a park, amongst the trees, or by running water. And for audiences to witness how a diverse community, disabled community, could express within an environment like that. I remember one audience member saying, I say this again with great respect, I didn't know a person in a wheelchair could do that. You know, move through an environment and how they would move through it and how they would express it. That was, I think, for audiences, always an eye-opener. And also that, you know, the disability community, again, with that lived perspective, dealing with issues that are relevant to humanity in general, the environment, how do you define, what is the definition of work for you? What is a relationship for you? How do you negotiate that? To hear the voices and the stories from the disability community about those kinds of things that are relevant to all of us, I don't know, I think it really leveled the ground. Everyone was on the same ground, and audiences would identify,
So was there any particular success moment or story that stands out for you where the audience really did have that perspective shift?
That perspective shift. Well, I have to say when we did the three stories about Daniel Miller, the son of Arthur Miller, that Daniel Miller was born with Down syndrome and put away and wasn't even known about till, the 70s, or till 2007, actually. We did the play called Hello, and where Daniel, the actress actually, who played Daniel Miller, was the main character. And afterwards, the audience, they wouldn't leave. And people stood up and said, I have a story like that. It addressed something that's very hidden, and I think in some way it addressed the shame that some people feel for having a relative or a child or someone they know that is cognitively very different. And I know that when we did that show at the Fire Hall, people laughed outrageously and then they cried. And I always remember some very, grown men crying. You don't see that often. And just to say, I understand the depth of distance, I guess, that many have experienced in acknowledging that someone with a cognitive disability has worth, has perspective, has gifts to share.
So, what are some of the key considerations about having disability and inclusion in theater? Why do you think it should be on the forefront?
Well, what is the world today? We are 2023. What is the world today? Are we not this incredible mosaic and, lovely stew of everything? Does not everyone deserve a place to voice their story if they so wish? And in live theater, what's so incredibly powerful about that is that it is human beings sharing with other human beings. It's live. There's no retake. It's not like film. So I think the expression and the stories, the perspectives, the feelings, the truth of humanity as it is today, I think expressed in live theater, nowhere is it as rich as in live theater. You know, that thing, people will not remember what you said, they will not remember what you did, but they will remember how you made them feel. And to do that in live theater is incredibly powerful.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
My friends, every group in society trying to make the world a better place has the same question. How do we reach the hearts and minds of others? Theater can be a great outlet for this. Susanna's stories and her insights about how it's all about bringing people together in a cool, relatable way, I think is a great answer to this. And so much as seeing a character with a disability gives someone who hasn't considered their life's possibilities the chance to step outside themselves and to say, I can relate to this person. This is someone who's taken their situation and turned it into the best that it can possibly be. Now, not everyone in every community is going to rise to amazing heights. However, you set personal goals and you try and accomplish things for yourself, you might be surprised what you can do. An individual with a disability might not necessarily want to be a gold medalist or to be the world's greatest business leader, but if their goal is simply to live a life with dignity and strength, and maybe even contribute to the substance of their community, there's no reason they can't do it. Any one of us has the potential to move mountains, even if it's just a stone at a time. That being said, nobody gets through life entirely on their own. Nobody can face all the challenges and even all the successes day-to-day life has for us without support, without someone to stand at our side. Now, back to my earlier point about how theater brings people together, sometimes it may serve as a catalyst get us to ask questions. If someone comes in and sees the story of a person with a disability, and maybe they're only familiar with the textbook examples of what a disability should be, or the myths and stereotypes that are so pervasive, maybe hearing someone's real life story might for the very first time get them to say, I now realize this is a person first and foremost. This is someone should be considered based on who and what they are, not what society tells us they should be. This is someone who has something to contribute. Seeing the story and the progression of such a person, understanding that for one little factor, one thing that makes them unique, they're simply a human being, entitled to the same dignities and considerations as anyone else. Be a very eye-opening experience, my friends. Change your whole world when you realize that equality can and should exist. And it's up to each one of us to ensure that we're doing our part, just to recognize people as people. No group is better or worse than any other in society. You can't judge any faction within the world that way. Every person is an individual. And remembering that, we can recognize disability is not interchangeable. Cultural backgrounds are not interchangeable. Any other form of identity is not interchangeable. If you've met one person from a given group, you've met one person from a given group. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.